be rigid, but be rigid about being flexible, because well-being is a journey. And what I found at age 48 is what works for me in my 20s changed in my 30s and now my 40s.
Welcome to the Drew Pruitt Podcast. Each week, we explore the inner workings of the body with one of the brightest minds in wellness, medicine, and mindset. This week's guests are Jason and Colleen Walkup. Jason and Colleen are the founders and co-CEOs of Mind Body Green and the authors of Wealth. They've been featured in New York Times, Entrepreneur Magazine, Fast Company, and Vogue, and they have a new book out today called The Joy of Well-Being, a practical guide to a happy and healthy long life. And on today's conversation with Jason and Colleen, we're talking about the topic of what have they and I changed our minds on over the last 10 to 15 years of us being in the wellness industry. What areas of their life did they under-prioritize? What areas of their life did they over-prioritize? For anyone who's interested in the topic, as I am, about how to change your mind and open up when you've gotten things wrong and make that okay because we're all human beings, this episode is absolutely for you. There's a ton of wellness gems and nuggets, and most importantly, some practical tips from their new book. Again, The Joy of Well-Being in this episode as well. I think you're going to love it. Stay tuned. Jason, Colleen, welcome to the podcast. Pleasure to have you guys here. Let's just do a couple brief intros so our audience gets a chance to get to know you.
Sure. So great to be here, Drew. I'm Jason Walkup. This is my wife, Colleen Walkup. We are the husband and wife, co-founders of Mind Body Green. For those of you not familiar, we're a leading independent media platform. We do content. We also have a podcast. We have a product line, including supplements and personal care. We do events. We do online education. We have a health coaching certification. So we got our hands in lots of pots. But today we're here to talk about a new book that Colleen and I wrote together called The Joy of Well-Being, which we're extraordinarily proud of.
So many great insights inside of the book. But I thought, and we were chit-chatting a little bit beforehand, I thought a great place to start the conversation, because you guys are at this intersection of seeing all the trends in wellness, all the latest things that are there, the trends that were trends and then faded away, and how the basics that are tried and true really rise to the surface. So I think feel like there's no better way to talk about this than the topic of what are some of the key areas in your life over the period of how many years now that you guys have been in this space?
14.
14 years. Where have you changed your mind? Where have you changed your mind? And this is going to be a multifaceted conversation. I'll just add in one more thing. Changing your mind is not celebrated enough in our society. And in fact, sometimes people fear announcing that they've changed their mind on topics. But I think that part of what makes us resilient, part of what makes us human beings, is the fact that we can grow and say, you know what, I got that wrong. That doesn't mean I'm a bad person. I just didn't see the full picture. And now I see it with also the context that even maybe right now there's things that we're doing that we're going to change our minds on in the future. All right. So that's the backstory and me on my soapbox. Jason, do you want to start us off? And
then 100%. I'm so glad you brought this up. This could be a 3-hour podcast about all the things we've changed.
We could go for 3 hours.
So, you know, I like to say be rigid, but be rigid about being flexible, because well-being is a journey. And what I found at age 48 is what works for me in my 20s changed in my 30s and now my 40s. For example, you know, I'm an ex-college basketball player. I lived in the gym. I was a gym rat. It was a gym or nothing. That was my 20s. No cardio. I did no legs. We'll come back to no legs and what happened to me 20 plus years later of doing no legs.
You got chicken legs like me?
No, my ass started to disappear.
Okay.
I looked in the mirror. I lost some weight. And we'll touch on the importance of strength training, but all of a sudden my former basketball butt was completely gone. I was developing old white man's flat ass.
So you used to have a bubble butt.
I used to have a bubble butt. I looked in the mirror and well, now it's coming back. I'm back in the gym. We'll touch on that, but it started to disappear. And so that was my 20s. And then in my 30s, I was running another startup. It wasn't doing well. I was extraordinarily stressed. Flying a lot, flew over 100,000 miles domestic in a year. My 6'7" body in a coach seat is not something I recommend for anyone. Turned out I had 2 extruded discs in my lower back, L4, L5, S1, pressing on my sciatic nerve, excruciating back pain.
Wow.
Went to a doctor, said you need surgery, sought a second opinion. Nothing against surgery, but see, it generally is a last resort. Second doctor said you need surgery, but maybe you should try some yoga. So started some really light yoga, and I went from couldn't walk to, over the course of 6 months, being completely fine. To this date, I've never had back surgery. And so that was my aha moment that led me to believe that true well-being was this blend of mental, physical, spiritual, emotional, and environmental well-being. One word, not three. Mind, body, green. Because I was a guy who was fit in the gym, but I was consuming way too much steak, too many martinis, so much so my face is on the wall of the Palm Steakhouse in Midtown Manhattan next to Adam Sandler and Joe Namath.
Nice. I read that in the book,
a little bit insane. And so I had this huge realization about yoga. And so I went from gym guy to, now in my 30s, yoga, yoga, yoga. Would go to every public yoga class in New York City, basically every great instructor in the, you know, in the west side of LA and New York. I've been to their class, and I ditched the gym, and that was it. Then in my 40s, we'll fast forward to, I'm living, you know, now we have two kids. Yoga is becoming more difficult. Can't go to public classes. It's 5 or 10 minutes in the weekend. It's not enough. And then I have this moment where I'm, you know, I've been steady about 200 pounds, and all of a sudden I don't get on the scale often. Now I do. I lost about 5 pounds. I'm like, where is it? I feel the same. And I look at my ass has disappeared. I said, I got to get back in the gym. And I need to do strength training. I need to focus on protein. And so as I think about my evolution with fitness, and also this segues to diet, I went from, I would say, hardcore carnivore, which did not work for me in my 20s, I would say. It worked, but I was falling apart inside. I had kidney stones. I was bloated all the time. I looked good in the mirror, but physically I was falling apart.
And just to interrupt for 1 second, sure. You don't mean carnivore in the modern sense of the carnivore diet. You were eating a lot of meat and processed foods.
Pretty much.
Okay,
got it. I would say, no, I would add alcohol. A lot of meat and a lot of alcohol in my 20s.
You're like, well, there's some martinis there too.
Many martinis. Two, when I started practicing yoga, vegetarian, experimented with vegan, experimented with raw vegan. And then if I come back now to my, so I went, you know, yoga, vegan, vegetarian, now in my 40s, I would say I'm an omnivore, lean plant forward, not plant based, and have now really focused on protein, because to promote muscle protein synthesis, to build muscle, which is a big focus for me, you need protein. More specifically, you need 30 grams per meal, and you need to make sure you have enough leucine, 2.5 grams, to activate the muscle protein synthesis. Otherwise, the protein kind of gets lost. And so now I'm back in the gym. So diet and exercise, to me, that journey has been incredible. And you know what? I'll change again. And so I come back to this idea of what's changed for me quite a bit. And we'll see what my 50s brings. You know, I have the ability to look at all of my markers. I do extensive lab work twice a year, the 28 vials of blood, and see how I'm doing. And if there's a change to be had, I'll make it. But I'll go back to be rigid, but be flexible.
I love it. Pauline, did you want to jump in?
Yeah. So it's really hard to separate our own personal values and the values of Mind, Body, Green. They're one and the same, and that it's all connected. But to kind of better understand what's changed, I'll spend a little bit of time on how I got on this journey, which is I had a life-threatening pulmonary embolism a little over 10 years ago. And that was my big come to Jesus on the floor, gut-wrenching, what is happening with my life. I had just finished a yoga class of Strala Yoga from Tara Stiles, one of our mutual friends, and was coming home. And I was like, called Jason. And was like, I'm having some trouble breathing. Feels weird, but I think I'm fine. Maybe I just worked out too hard. Those things we tell ourselves when we're not listening to the whispers in our body that something's wrong. We took the subway home and I collapsed going up the stairs. Got up and convinced myself I didn't need care. You know, told myself I was dehydrated. It was a hot day. Didn't really want to spend time at the ER. And on Monday morning, Jason was like, you can't go to work unless you stop by your doctor. So my doctor saw me in the morning, wrote a note for me and said, I have a pulmonary embolism, and was like, bring this to the new NYU ER and go there right now. So I was just frozen with, I didn't even know what a pulmonary embolism was very discombobulated, got to the ER where they had said, you know, they hadn't seen anyone who was alive with this many clots in their lungs. So that was the start of this journey. And, you know, I realized and learned through a lot of testing, because when this happens to a woman in their early 30s, they do all sorts of tests. And I had had the pulmonary embolism after being on birth control pills for 10 years. And it was one of the early articles on MindBodyGreen that went pretty viral and got so many comments of women who are like, this happened to me too. Fast forward now, there's so many women talking about it, which is so important. But this was not something that people were talking about, that were aware of. It was like, oh, the risk's 1 in 10,000, when in reality, at least from the comments I got from a lot of women with shared experiences, I think it's a little bit more frequent.
And just to clarify here, you're talking about the link between like birth control and pulmonary embolism?
And clotting, correct. And clotting. Yeah. And that for me was a catalyst of starting this whole journey. It was one of those gut-wrenching moments of the soul. I don't think you go out and kind of change your entire life when things are status quo and everything's going fine. And that for me was the start of this very long journey. And our book, The Joy of Wellbeing, is a book I wish I had then to have helped me guide me on this journey, because I tried everything to help me feel better spiritually, emotionally, and help my body heal. And I do believe that these stories of healing are so important to tell each other, because I was looking to Serena Williams, who had had a pulmonary embolism, and I was like, she was able to play tennis again. I will feel better. There was a period of time for about 6 months where it was just hard to breathe. Those things you take for granted, we take 15,000 to 30,000 breaths a day. It's a pretty important function, and that was the first time that I struggled just to breathe. And on the outside, I looked fine. So it was a really difficult period. And that started my whole wellness journey and wellness discovery. And I wish I had had a roadmap, because I tried a lot of things that didn't have the highest ROI on a path to get to the place where we are now today, almost more than a decade later. And I have some similar and some different kind of places where I've changed. And protein for me is at the top of the list too. And I think I ask myself a lot, because I was deeply entrenched in this space, why did I take so long to come to this protein epiphany that so many of us are having? And I think because of, you know, spending so much time within the yoga world, I was leaning plant forward. And protein for me, especially as I age in my 40s, has been such a game changer. And then combining it with resistance training, I've totally changed my workout routine. I am doing still some yoga, and I'm always going to be on team yoga, but I've really shifted into doing more strength training. And I'm not the only woman, as ClassPass is reporting, you know, weightlifting for women being one of the top classes people chose last year, which is a huge shift. And I'm doing a lot of kettlebell workouts from our mutual friend T-Mac Fitness to really work on my strength. The other thing that has evolved and changed is sleep has been this reoccurring problem for me and, you know, 33% of America, the 50 to 70 million people who have some sort of sleep disorder, which I'm sure it's actually higher than that. But I think the tools and approach that I've used to fix it have evolved. So back, you know, over a decade ago, people were not talking about light in the same way and being mindful about the time of day and your light exposure when you wake up. And now that's just such a fundamental part of how we both start the day. We talked about how we moved to Miami. It's a lot easier to start your day with sunlight when you live in a city like Miami. And it's one of the reasons why we did move there, from being able to have that vitamin D, which is so helpful for me and my own happiness and well-being. But you know, there was an interesting study done in Colorado where they tracked a group of campers, and just even being in sunlight, waking up and falling asleep with the light after 7 days, your body can start to regulate its own melatonin in different ways. So light has been a huge factor in how I think about my own sleep. It's not something that I can ever kind of forget about, because it's something I'm probably going to be mindful of for the rest of my life. But protein, resistance training, and approach to sleep are kind of my top three. But I agree, it's always evolving. Like, our approach to health and wellness is always changing and growing, even if our values of looking at the whole person in a connected way, holistic way, doesn't change.
And I joked from a vanity perspective. I talked about my disappearing flat ass. But, you know, for us, this is in the context of longevity as we talk about strength training. You know, we know that in your 40s, you start to lose up to 1% of bone density a year. Sarcopenia is very real. We know that if you're over the age of 65, you have a 1 in 4 chance of falling. If you fall once, you are twice as likely to fall again. if you fall and break your hip, there's a 30 to 40% chance you will die within a year. If you just pause there for a moment, that's pretty scary. We've seen this play out with some of our dear friends. And if you think about it, you know, if you fall and break your hip, it's not necessarily maybe the hip fracture that kills you, but it's the complication. It's the infection. It's the depression. And, you know, ideally, so the why behind the strength training and the muscle mass is, one, maybe you're about to fall, you're strong enough to grab something so that you don't fall and you have that balance. Or two, maybe if you do fall, you have that armor in that the skeletal muscle mass where you can break the fall so that doesn't happen. And for us in our 40s, this is definitely a priority.
I love it. Have there been any people, like, I know for a lot of people on our podcast, Dr. Gabrielle Lyon was a big influence. Were there other people that are out there that were big influences for you?
Love Gabrielle Lyon. Love Don Lehman, Dr. Don Lehman. Yep. He's done a lot of incredible work on.
Yeah, he's her mentor too, right?
Yes, yes. Peter Attia has been great on this. A lot of people, but I think it's at the forefront of the conversation. And if you're in your 40s, it needs to be top of mind.
So zooming out, and you know, there's a lot of things you both said. So we got plenty of time. We're going to unpack those, and we have plenty more to get into too. So this whole plant-forward movement and the plant-based movement, you know, before that, which is obviously still around, some of the big sort of themes that came out of that, which some people still adhere to, were the components of, okay, is, you know, first of all, even for a lot of people was like, is meat ethical, right? There was that whole kind of conversation, the spiritual, the animal welfare, which, you know, most all of us care about animal welfare, and we don't want animals to be suffering unnecessarily in the sort of factory farming system. But I'm going to put that one aside, sure. And also put aside the climate change conversation, because that's a whole other thing that's there. And there's a lot of pieces to it, especially when you bring in regenerative agriculture, et cetera, et cetera. Now, talking about the nutrition side, I remember, because I was a raw vegan at one point in time too, living in Manhattan, going to Pure Food and Wine on a regular basis. If anybody's seen the documentary Bad Vegan, and Sarah, you know a little bit about Pure Food and Wine. And back then I used to tell people like, oh, I'm reading all these books. People say like protein doesn't matter. How does a gorilla get their protein? You know, how does a cow get their protein? How does a rhino get their protein? These are big, big animals. Okay, guess what? They eat raw greens. We're gonna all just eat raw greens. And that was kind of the narrative a little bit back then. Then the narrative became like, oh, yes, okay, protein is still important, but you're going to get all of that from just eating, you know, greens, quinoa, this, that, lentils. You can get enough protein, right? But it was a little bit of a combination of protein is exaggerated, and then what protein you do need, you can get it. Then later on, as the wellness industry and space kind of grew a little bit, you had people like Walter Longo, you know, who is a great person, is putting out some great research and stuff, but really got people alarmed because he would talk about the connection of things like mTOR with protein. He would talk about these big observational studies about these societies around the world that had less protein and how less protein was associated with longevity. And, you know, this is where the person who's listening goes through, listens to your podcast, my podcast, Dr. Hyman, everybody else. And then on the flip side, here's somebody like Dr. Gabrielle Lyon. Here's somebody like, you know, Lane Norton. Here's somebody like Peter Attia, and starts to feel like, okay, well, what is it, right? So for you, when did you fully, besides, you know, again, we don't want to keep on talking about your butt, but you brought it up, you know, besides noticing your fading ass, was there an insight that kind of had you string all this stuff together, say, okay, this is where this one side, maybe the plant, you know, based community, I get what they're trying to say, but this is the part that they're sort of missing, because part of what you're talking about in the book is having the intelligence to step back and look at like the core basics that help us thrive as a human. But the people who are listening feel like they're getting mixed messages. So for you, whoever wants to start off first, what was that insight that had you like really be like, I think that there's more to the story than how I was approaching it.
This is a big one. So I think for me, it was a couple things. One, you know, you mentioned there are all these large, great observational studies or epidemiological studies, and they're a dime a dozen. And we have them on our shows and they're interesting and we talk about them. And, you know, for me, it started to become clear with my own lab work that we shouldn't discount the N of one study. And the end of one is a U. And I'll use two real world examples of two friends of ours. So Mark Sisson, who's 69, her friend in Miami, Rich Rolls, 56. They are both in incredible shape. They are incredibly fit. They could not be at more opposite extremes in terms of their approach to nutrition. Rich is 100% plant-based. Mark is almost carnivore. He's hardcore paleo. But they're both flourishing. What do they have in common? They don't really eat processed food, and they exercise a ton. And so who's anyone to say that what Mark is doing is wrong or what Rich is doing is wrong or vice versa? And I think, you know, for me, what I started to see in my own lab work when I started to dial things in, I didn't fit in a box. And I think most people don't fit in a box. And it was important to us to give people the tools, which we talk about in a book, to come to some of their own conclusions around what diet works for them. I think at the highest level, we do believe in the power of eating real food. And we do think that plays a significant role. We know that for every 10, there was a great study out of France, for every, I think, 10% increase in ultra processed food led to increased 14% risk of mortality. And I'll tell a story, which to me, I think is a lot of food for thought with regards to the processed food conversation. So in the book, we reference this story, this horrible disease, pellagra, which was ravaging Italy for decades in the turn of the century. And essentially this disease is caused by a deficiency in niacin. And so it kind of came and went in Italy, shows up in the US in the 1940s in the southeastern US. That's, you know, malnutrition. And so what they did in Italy is the government subsidized these community ovens in some of these lower income areas where people could essentially bake bread because bread is very rich in niacin. And that worked, and pellagra kind of disappeared in northern Italy. What we did in the US was we went to the lab and we started to fortify foods with niacin, and that worked too. And so you have a tale of two, fast forward to today, you have a tale of two cities where obesity in Italy, northern Italy, I think it's 8%, in Mississippi, it's close to 40. And if you look at the diet, it's still very rich in meat. But you start to think about, well, what else is different between Italy and the US? And it's ultra processed foods. And there are a lot of variables, but for us, you know, I bring back to this idea of eating real food is so critical. And we don't know, I think there are unintended consequences of ultra processed foods. And I think at the highest level, that's what we want to encourage people to eat real foods and to really pay attention to the N of one and maybe ignore some of the noise out there.
Yeah.
I loved your summary of the past 10 years. I was just nodding my head being like, yes, yes, I tried that. I listened to that. I see all the confusion. You know, the aha moment for me personally in my own life was when I really started to think about what I wanted my life to look like 30, 40 years ago. And in the book, we talk about Arthur Brooks' idea of your own personal mission statement. And I think that's so important to think about. What do you want to be doing in 30 and 40 years? Do you want to be on the ground playing with your kids with ease? And I've seen how hard it is for my own parents to get up and down from the ground. And I've taken notice. And I've realized that when my kids have their kids, if they choose to do that, I want to be the grandparent who's able to get down on the ground and play. And I started to look at my own functional strength. And I had probably the reverse happen after kids in that I lost weight and I wasn't going to the gym because I had a lot of other stuff going on with two children and a company. And I realized that I had lost a lot of my strength. And when I started to think about the type of life I wanted 30, 40 years out, I wanted to be on the ground playing with kids. I wanted to be in, you know, sound mind and body. I wanted to be able to do the things I like to do, which are, you know, going for walks with Jason, going for walks with the girls. And I realized that I needed a different approach from a strength and function standpoint to be able to realize that mission statement in 30, 40 years.
Yeah, I love that. I still think today, you know, naturally, because everybody's trying to navigate this space, more and more people like yourself who are opening up and sharing, hey, here's where we've changed our mind. I think there's even a chance to go a little bit further. So hear me out on this. I still think in the conversation, I'm totally as a past, I grew up vegetarian. I was vegan for probably about 7 years. And of those 7 years, probably 3 years was like, you know, primarily raw food was the, you know, the bulk of my calories. And even sometimes today, guests come on this podcast. I was telling you about a guest that was on here, you know, a while ago. And when people are trying to navigate and sort of put together and hear how they approach their diet, a term that's often used is like plant forward, right? Mm-hmm. Or like, hey, I'm plant-based. And not everybody's in the habit of tracking their calories. I'm kind of doing a workout program right now with this group based in Los Angeles. And so I have to track my calories, and I'm doing this for the first time in my life, which is actually like a really interesting experience. You know, you see very quickly, even though not everything is macros, not everything is calories in, calories out, you really get a chance to understand how even in the wellness space, we can gravitate towards these processed wellness foods that are labeled healthy, that are at Air One, that are Whole Foods, which tastes great. And yeah, they might not have as much sugar or this, but they have a lot of refined, you know, starches inside of them, or they have a lot of more fat than you would typically think about inside of diet. So in tracking my calories, I started to realize that I eat a lot of vegetables, but when you add up all the vegetables that I eat, and I eat a shit ton of vegetables, you're talking about less than probably 15% of my total calories. Mm-hmm. Calories in the day is actually coming from vegetables. So I want to be transparent with my audience here, because sometimes even when I've said, you know, yeah, like I'm plant forward and things, people actually think that the vast majority of the food that I'm eating is plants. Maybe by volume people look at it, but not even then, right? Animal food is still the vast majority of my calories. And then probably somewhere in the middle is you would have, there's still plants, but things like olive oil, avocado oil, because those are, of course, are very like sort of nutrient dense.
Yep.
Sure.
Is that what you guys are seeing in your diet? Like, yeah, feel free to chime in.
Yeah. You know, I think for me specifically, you know, I went from, you know, the 24-ounce ribeye, like you get to a steakhouse and eat the whole thing, to now when we have meat, it's probably like the 3 to 5 ounce serving. Mm-hmm. It's smaller. And the plate, if I'm looking at the plate, it's a lot of vegetables, and then it's the meat or the fish. It's almost like a side. But from you, to your point, from a calorie perspective, depending how you, the majority of the plate is the fruits and vegetables.
By visual, volume, taking up space.
But if we're talking about calories, it probably is. That's the predominant, becoming more even with animal foods, just given the fact that I don't know the macro off my head, but like how much, you know, 3 ounces of broccoli versus 3 ounces of chicken.
Sure.
Big difference.
Yeah.
So I think we are having protein at every meal, and it's either dairy, fish, or meat.
And I have to be extraordinarily intentional to get that basic 30 grams of protein that we're talking about. It is not something that comes naturally or easy at all for me, probably because of how I've eaten for the past 15 years, that I don't really believe in counting much, but I do have to count those grams of protein because it is not something that comes naturally to me.
Yeah, and it really goes back to, you know, again, Dr. Lyon, I think, was on your guys' podcast. She's on our podcast. She's been making the rounds. People undereat on protein.
100%.
And they get so hungry for other things. And then naturally, this is how you can find people, even in the wellness space, that feel, I actually am struggling with weight. I'm putting on weight. Well, let's look at all the things that you're eating, right? Again, not everything is that calories in and calories out, but we want to look at it to just, it's a good measure to actually generally track sort of energy that's consuming. And of course, the quality of that energy matters more. But when you track it, you see how under your eating on certain key macros like protein that's there. So what have been some practical ways? Because I'll tell you, I've heard this from a lot of individuals. I've heard this from my sisters. I've heard this from my wife. She goes through this a lot. And I think there's even guys that are out there that, especially if they were eating plant-based more previously, they're struggling with it. So what were some of the things to make it easier to hit that 30 grams of protein in a meal? Whether it's actual food or whether it's just sort of, you know, lifestyle approach to make sure you eat on time, for example.
Yeah, I mean, you just think of like the huge transformation that's happening of how the wellness world used to think about breakfast. Think avocado toast, where it went through that, you know, revolution where everyone was sharing it on Instagram, to now For me, it's three juicy eggs on sourdough bread with some healthy fat of an avocado is like my staple go-to breakfast. We find that like having systems so that we are eating the same things, which may sound boring from the outside, but when you're trying to make your life a lot simpler and easy to integrate, we love kind of eating the same things, having the same breakfasts that we know we like, are easy to stock up on, and then it's just rinse and repeat.
And is that 30 grams of protein? Just thinking, like three eggs.
That's not even there.
Sourdough toast.
I know.
That may not even be there. You need to have a little bit of yogurt.
You got to throw in the yogurt.
Grass-fed yogurt in there to make
little
it.
Little Greek yogurt.
Yep. Grass-fed Greek. Yep.
We just stocked up our fridge here.
And I've learned to love sardines. Wild sardines. Learned to love wild sardines and olive oil.
Yeah.
But you're picking up on just how hard it is.
Yeah, it's difficult.
It's hard.
It's tough.
It's a retraining.
It's retraining, and then also a lot of the foods that, you know, one thing obviously the wellness industry did great at is really helping people to demystify fat. You know, people were so afraid of having fat. But because fat is so filling and so calorically dense, I noticed this myself, you know, I'm like a huge olive oil fan. And I would have like a big fat green salad, and I would have that for lunch, and I have some sweet potatoes in there and olives and all these great things. And then I'd put in a can of sardines. But the can of sardines that I had, I might use half of it and add all that stuff together. You know, I was maybe only hitting like 12 grams of protein, 15 grams of protein when I really started to track it.
Yes.
And I looked at it and I was like, wow, I'm getting so full on the fat calories, which great, those are good for you. But I'm not eating enough protein. Let me add in the protein, dial back the fat just a little bit to still have a healthy component of fat. And then I actually, for the first time, started to see, like you were talking yourself, Jason, I started to see progress in the gym. Mm-hmm. I started to see my body composition shift, right? And those are like things that you genuinely feel. We wrote a whole article that we can link into the show notes on, you know, you guys, we didn't mention it, but grip strength, right?
Yeah.
Grip strength being one of the number one, right? All the studies that are out there showing the connection between grip strength and longevity, which goes back to sarcopenia.
Yeah.
And then there's this other thing, which is in the last few years, we've had this revolution of, you know, Mark Hyman, you guys know him well. Sure. He's an investor in Mind Body Green and everything. He wrote the first sort of big bestseller on blood sugar, right? It's called The Blood Sugar Solution. And then it kind of fizzled out and people would talk about it a little bit, but with the advent of things like CGMs and so many more voices that are out there, Glucose Goddess, Casey Means, right? People started to see like blood sugar is so central. Our fasting insulin is so central. Mm-hmm. Now you make the connection with more muscle mass actually allows you to have a little bit more carbohydrates in your diet because it's using up all the glucose inside of your body.
100%.
So you start to connect all these dots and you see, okay, is this thing that's so central, protein, which is so central, which is what we're talking about now. We're going to go into another topic in a second, alcohol. Everybody wants to know about alcohol. Protein, which is so central to muscle synthesis, and some people are making you really scared about it because of its potential link to mTOR and longevity and other stuff. But you're like, how could this thing not be good for us? And maybe we don't know the full complete picture. Maybe the full science isn't in, just a little segment of the science is in.
Look, I think mTOR is interesting, but I agree. I don't think we have the full picture there yet. And I think, you know, this is where I go back to the end of one and listen to your body. How do you feel? Look at your labs. Are they getting better? And put aside this idea of in the back, oh, I have a problem with longevity because of mTOR, that there are unintended consequences here. I think see how you feel and be judicious about doing lab work a couple times a year, twice a year. That's all you need. And see how you, and if something starts to go in a wrong direction, then make a change.
Yeah. Is there any recent lab work before we go switch to the next topic? Like, is there a test or something that you guys have been like, the whole picture matters, and obviously people should work with a practitioner and everything, but is there any sort of marker recently or any test that you did that kind of gave you an aha moment of, wow, here's how I need to switch things up maybe in my diet?
Wow.
Or in my lifestyle.
I do extensive labs. So one of them I'll just call out because I think not enough people are aware is homocysteine. And so homocysteine is essentially an inflammatory marker. When homocysteine is very high, it could lead to the type of blood clot that Colleen had, pulmonary embolism, aneurysm, stroke. Don't want it. Your homocysteine should be under 15. So about 5 years ago, I started to become serious about blood work, given I have access to all these amazing doctors. And, you know, my passion for longevity is due to the fact that men in my family have a poor family history. My father died of heart disease at 47. My maternal grandfather, heart disease at 49. Paternal grandfather, cancer at 44. Mm. So I'm in my 40s, got first young kid. I'm like, you know what? Maybe I should go beyond blood pressure. So I do extensive lab work with Dr. Frank Lipman. Everything's good except my homocysteine is 63, which to this date, I've joked about this with Mark. I don't think anyone's ever seen it that high. Lipman made me take it again. It's a mistake. It wasn't. And so through supplementation, I became a big believer in supplementation because my diet was pretty good. I got it from 63 to 10. And the risk with homocysteine levels, it's almost like a J curve. The higher it gets, like the number, the incidence, it's scary. And so that's a test, I think, and the why behind both Colleen and I have the MTHFR gene, like half the population. I have the double C677T, so I'm like the double gene, double copy. And so if you have that gene, you're at risk here, and not enough people know about it. So I just want to like call that one into question. For everyone, just get it checked, please. Because if you're listening, odds are you got the gene. Just make sure you're okay. So a recent test, you know, I started, as I mentioned, you know, the sarcopenia, the flat ass, strength training, longevity. So started to get serious about protein, started to hit the gym, started to get serious about body weight training too. And within a month, I gained almost 5 pounds of muscle mass. And body fat.
Now that you're saying the link, now that your homocysteine was in check.
Check. So 63 to 10. So that's one thing I wanted. That's a watch out. But like, you know, going to the recent work I did was essentially doing a test from skeletal muscle mass. I think everyone should do that baseline and just increasing protein, being conscious around protein consumption, making sure I'm getting the three meals a day at 30 grams and hitting the leucine, and then doing strength training, was able to increase skeletal muscle mass by 5 pounds in a month. I'm 48. Great. So that's another one. You can measure this stuff.
Yeah. And so, how are you measuring that? Was that caliber testing, in-body scan, DEXA scan?
In-body scan.
Okay.
In-body scan.
Yeah. You know, you were mentioning, I'll share a test on my end, and then, you know, we'll go in whatever direction you guys want to go into. You were mentioning cardiovascular disease. Mm-hmm. So a topic and area that is probably one of the most confusing areas, even for the people who study this, is the area of atherosclerosis, right? Yes. Like you're going in the direction of eventually maybe having heart attack, stroke, other things. So, you know, even people in the wellness space know that, okay, LDL isn't the full part of the story, but there are some things that we should pay attention to. There's a lot of big observational data with the link of LDL. And then largely because of people like Peter Attia,
Sure. Everybody
started talking about ApoB.
Yes, I've done right? that recently too.
Yeah, so ApoB is another one. And then even with ApoB, this is just an indicator, right? It's not like if you have high ApoB, that in itself means that you have something going on, but it's like Peter Attia calls it shots on goal, right? Yes. All these little particulates are going to be the particulates in the ApoB that can disrupt the endothelial cells. And then inside of your arterial walls, you can get little pimples. And those pimples from these like shots on goal and damage, they can... as they develop a pimple, your body starts to put plaque around it, right? To sort of insulate that area. Now, that plaque first starts off as soft plaque, but then later on, that plaque becomes hard plaque.
Yes.
And that becomes a real challenge. The problem is, you know, people have all heard of like a CT scan, right? And they always tell you like, go get a scan, like especially once you hit the age of 40.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, if you're relatively healthy and you at least work out a little bit and you're not obese, most people are going to score a zero, right?
Yes.
Most men are going to score a zero. So it's not really an indication of what's going on right now. So then I met this cardiologist in St. Louis. And actually, this is another shout out to Dr. Gabrielle Lyon because she was the first person to tell me about this scan. So this is called the Clearly scan.
I've done it.
You've done it?
Yes.
So I got my results back. How was it? Like, what did you see? Like, what were the insights?
So I had a zero CAC.
Yeah.
At 48.
And which is pretty expected,
yeah.
Right? Again, that's
but
the thing.
It's not for some people.
For
like,
some people,
you want
to
be zero.
Yes, you want to be zero.
What's interesting is 5 years ago, it was a two. And I went from two to zero.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Yes, that's huge.
And I'm eating more meat.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is also interesting. And then I had some a little plaque, nothing to be concerned about, but I had some.
Yeah. And then were you given also, like, did you work on it with a physician? Did they give you any recommendations of things that you can be looking at or paying attention
essentially
to?
Essentially, for me, it was keep doing what you're doing and do the test again in 3 to 5 years. You just don't want to make sure, you know, if you do have plaque, I think it's rare because everyone has some.
Yeah, everybody has some.
Some. Totally. Just watch it. Like, is this ballooning? Is it staying the same? Just kind of watch it. But it is a fascinating test. So that was a takeaway for me too. If I look at all, I'll just reiterate, 5 years ago when I first did the test, I was probably 80% vegan and now I am not. And I went from 2 to 0.
Yeah, that's great. But the question is also too, you know, you're working out now. You're doing things like cold plunge.
Yeah, I'm not doing cold plunge.
Oh, you're not doing cold plunge.
I believe in it, but we're not doing it.
Okay, cool. We'll talk about that in a second. But I'm sure there's other lifestyle factors. You're maybe even, you know, drinking less, or do you not drink at all now?
I drink less.
Okay, you drink, less. So it's not just diet, right? There's other things that are there too, but diet is a big part of it as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with cardiovascular disease, I'll reference my all-time favorite study, which we put in the book, is the Rosetto study.
Yeah.
And so for those not familiar, Rosetto was the small town in rural Pennsylvania in the 1950s. So in the 1950s in America, heart disease arrives, except in Rosetto. There's like virtually no heart disease. And so they look at this town, they say, well, you know, what's going on? What are the things they're doing? And they were drinking nightly, they were smoking, they were eating meatballs, they were having pasta, all the things our guests say not to do for the most part. They were doing it every night, but they were doing it in the context of multi-generational living. It's a very close-knit community. They were celebrating birthdays, they were knocking on each other's doors, having people over for cocktail hour. And that was really powerful, multi-generational living, real IRL connection. And then in the 60s, what they found is when the community started to break apart, boom, heart disease arrived, caught up with the national average. And to me, that takeaway, specifically for where we are in this moment of time coming out of the pandemic, you cannot underestimate the power of real, meaningful social connection and the magic. There's so much we don't know. If you think about the context of cardiovascular disease, they're literally doing everything you should not do, and they didn't have any.
And to go back to your original question about what has changed on our perspective, I think we both would say the importance of connection. We know that loneliness has the same impact on mortality as having 15 cigarettes a day. And after we've all lived through some sort of big T, little T trauma over the past couple of years, we all know the value of real, meaningful connection and having friendships that you can rely on, that you can count on when times get hard. There was a study from Cigna that 50% of Americans in 2019 didn't think that they had meaningful in-person daily connection. And I think we both wonder what that number would be today in 2023. But that's been something that wasn't really part of the wellness conversation over a decade ago is what are you eating? How are you exercising? And now I don't think we can ignore the impact of spirituality and connection on overall health and well-being.
Yeah, it's so true. I remember reading the article when I think like Malcolm Gladwell was one of the first to put like the map on, like put Rosetta on the map with this article in the New Yorker. And another interesting fact that was there is that the average male was part of like 3 social groups.
Yeah.
Right? Like lawn bowling, the church group, whatever it is. And we are in a crisis of people feeling really even perceived loneliness because a lot of people are around people, but they don't feel that sense of belonging or a sense of purpose or a sense of connection, even if there's people around them, so to speak. I mean, how many of you guys live in New York? I lived in New York for a little bit. There's so many people around you and you might be seeing people. You might be seeing people at the office, but you can truly feel like you don't belong.
100%.
Well, I want to go back to the clearly because here's another part where I was going to share a little bit more, right? And I'm where I'm in your same boat, but I'm also not in your same boat. And it also just goes to show, which I want to be very transparent with my audience. I'm going to have Dr. Michael Twynham on, who's the cardiologist that I'm working with. He did the scan. He's working with me. And also the scan is kind of combined with my latest sort of full Boston Heart panel and years of all the tests looking together. And so the crazy thing for me is that definitely seems that I have, I'm waiting on my genetic test results for this particular test that I did around how I metabolize lipids, but it seems that I do not do a really good job metabolizing lipids. And that is probably a familial history, genetic sort of thing. A lot of South Asians tend to have it, and it seems like I have it as well too. But my ApoB and my LDL are like, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I could probably pull it up. They're like off the charts, right? They're just so high. And even with me kind of cutting back on things like red meat, removing coconut oil from my diet, which is actually really helpful for me. I don't do well with high concentrated saturated fats, even though I don't go out of my way to avoid food saturated fats, but high concentrations of saturated fats like coconut oil, I don't feel well. And again, that's all about that personalization. But, and, you know, again, this is what he's telling me. Let's get him on the record and kind of, I want him to show everybody my results. We'll go through the labs and everything. I kind of want to put it out there, which is another thing that I want to talk to you guys about. I have an idea for the wellness community. He told me straight up that my Clearly scan was the cleanest that he's seen for any male, including his own. And he would always use his as the benchmark for people as a cardiologist. So where I'm even more confused, and we're kind of unpacking this with him, is that he's like, look, still, I want you to reduce your ApoB, because again, those are like shots on goal and you're really high right now. So now we're even debating whether we're looking at everything. Do I have to go down the track of medication? Not a statin, because that wouldn't even work in my situation. And are there other more aggressive things that I have to do? I also got a sauna because my brother-in-law is a cardiologist and he swears that the sauna has helped him sort of reduce his overall level of ApoB. So in one way, he's telling me that my heart is cleaner than anybody's seen. In another way, he's saying that your ApoB and LDL is off the charts, which some people in the carnivore space would say, well, it doesn't matter. Just keep on doing what you're doing. Right. But he's saying it actually does matter. And we have to at least pay a little attention to it because we don't want to increase the likelihood. Is this way because you used to be a raw food vegan in the past, you know, and you just started eating meat at the age of like 26? Or there's a lot of factors that are there.
It is. And with cardiovascular disease, you're always going to proceed with caution because if a lot of many, I forget the statistic, but many first incidences are the last. They're catastrophic.
Yeah. The first time you have an incident, a lot of people die. It's like 40% of people or something.
That could be it. And, you know, to your point, I still don't think we have a full picture there. So my ApoB recently, so I was in the 80s, I went as high as the 90s, and I recently did it. I got it to 75, and which I was excited about. I want to get it lower. As Peter Thiel would say, he wants to obliterate his ApoB. And so what I found interesting is I had taken the ApoB test a couple of months after we had moved to Miami. And, you know, new city, we're going out to eat a lot. You're a tourist in your new city. So we're eating out a lot, having more drinks than probably usual, probably more French fries than usual, more everything. However, one, I'm enjoying it in the context of with my family. I'm having a good time when I'm having a drink, going out to eat, having the fried foods and so forth. But I'm also working out more. And to me, I thought it was fascinating in that, you know, for so many years, I've said this to Mark, we used to say, you can't exercise your way out of a bad diet. And I'm starting to think, maybe you can a little bit here.
Well, you don't have a bad diet. You actually have a pretty good diet. Yeah, and then you occasionally cheat.
For those couple months, we were going out quite a bit. You know, what's the latest
restaurant?
Well, the
body's also super resilient. Two months is going to take a while. Yes. You know, turn that into like 2 years and then maybe you'll have a better sense of things.
A good story of the resilience of the human spirit and body.
Not to mention your mood, your mentality. And of course, of like above. You said, you know,
the Miami
connecting
sunshine.
With people.
The
Miami sunshine.
Yeah.
The freedom of just being able to be down there. Okay, I wanted to come back to this, but alcohol. You know, you mentioned in the book, you know, you used to drink a lot. Your photo was at a bar for basically ordering a ton of martinis and all that other stuff. What was your alcohol intake like before you kind of really got into being dialed into the space?
Too much. You know, and I think it's why I have caution around this idea of intuitive anything when you're not actually in touch with your body, because I think I was intuitively thinking that I should have 3 or 4 drinks. And it was that point in time when you have to, you know, perhaps lie to your doctor when you're telling them about your alcohol intake, it should have been one of the many red flags, you know, that I was consuming too much alcohol. And, you know, for me, the easiest way to make the change was looking up about looking at the implication on my sleep. And that was a real easy way to not just cut down on my alcohol use, but also bring it up. If I am going to have a drink, I'm the crazy person that likes to have the margarita at lunch. Day drinking, bringing it back in style, because if I am going to have one drink, I'd rather have it earlier in the day when it's going to have less of an impact on my sleep. But you have a book here from, you know, Stephen Gundry, and I think he has a good line. If you haven't started drinking, don't start.
Yeah, totally. And what's it like today for you guys?
Like, we'll drink occasionally. You know, I think I still love a great glass of wine, a good margarita, a nice cold beer. Maybe one or maybe two, but that's kind of it. Whereas in my 20s, it was, you know, I really enjoyed New York to the fullest and would go out all the time and drink.
And do you think also just by nature of you guys not being in New York, which is such a drinking town, do you think like just by nature of not being there that even it's cut down a little bit less now being in Miami?
I think it's a couple things. One is New York absolutely definitely has a drinking culture. Absolutely. I think also having children, and I also think for me, the wearables. I wear an Oura and a Whoop, and I like looking at nice scores. And right away, you see how the damage it does to your resting heart rate, your quality of sleep, to your HRV. It's just very clear. If you'd like to wake up with good scores, don't drink. And they're actually the long-term damage.
Did you guys see this viral tweet by Mark Andreessen?
Yes, he gave up drinking.
And he gave up drinking. Well, the punchline of it is, and I covered this in a previous episode with my buddy Antonio, he was like, I'm sleeping better, I'm more focused. I don't know if he referenced weight, but you know, he mentioned all these sort of benefits that are there. He credited Andrew Huberman in his podcast on alcohol, which by the way was like the number two most listened to podcast all of last year, right? But, out of all podcasts. But then he said, and I freaking hate it.
Well, I think, you know, I do want to bring it back to joy. You know, if you're out celebrating with friends and they're having a drink and it brings you joy to have a drink, have a drink. I think you do more damage there stressing about not drinking and being angry you can't drink. Assuming, of course, you don't have a problem with alcohol, have the drink and enjoy it. And I think, you know, breaking bread, having a cocktail with someone, celebrating is really important. And don't give up alcohol just for the sake of giving up alcohol, again, unless you have a problem.
Yeah.
Basically, everything that we've talked about today, whether it's how you move, how you eat, how you drink, it's better done in the company of friends and family.
Yeah. And we used to talk about celebratory moments, but I think the tricky part for people, and this is where you just have to experiment. I think it's good to go off of caffeine for a little while just to see what it feels like. Right.
And I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like it very much.
And caffeine is a little bit different. Obviously, there's a whole different dependence, but I think it's good to just see what the baseline is, see what you feel, see how much you need. Usually when I take a little bit of a break from caffeine, I always come back to caffeine, but I may not need, you know, three cups or whatever. Right. And I think the same thing is with alcohol. All of our tolerances sort of build up. We get used to it. And by the way, like life is so filled with pleasure right now that every occasion is a celebration. So I think the part that I'll push back a little bit on that, not push, but just add to it, is that we have so much celebratory things that are happening at work, at you know, friends' birthdays, this, a family situation. Before you know it, you could be looking up and you say you're a social drinker, but you're drinking, you know, three times, you know, a week. And that's where you can just take a look and say, okay, would it be worthwhile to just take a little pause, see how I feel? And then it's fine to have it every so once in a while. The problem is that every so once in a while means a lot of different things to different people.
Yes, totally.
Pick your spots. You're probably more social than we are.
Because I don't have kids
yet. It'll change once you have kids.
Yeah, I don't have kids yet.
I was like, we don't have to go to that. Sorry, can't make that wedding.
And I think your philosophy on caffeine might change at that point in time too.
Oh, listen, I mean, the good and bad of it is that I didn't get into caffeine until probably just a few years ago, right? So that's the
impressive.
That's the, I just never, same thing with alcohol. I just never got it. I didn't understand it. I didn't get it. So I'm a very much an outlier. And even then still, I love my coffee, right? I'm not planning on giving it up. It was more just a sense of trying to take a step back from things, seeing how you feel,
sure,
just to get a little bit of a break. And then the caffeine actually even hits you. You know, I took my whole family. This is kind of nuts. I'll do an episode with it. I'm going to have my parents on the podcast. So I organized an assisted psilocybin retreat for my family. And my parents were like, we want to go. We want to do this. My parents are not like hippies. They don't even really barely drink any alcohol. They've never smoked weed in their life. Like they've never done much, but they've heard a few episodes that I've done with leaders in this field. And they were like, this sounds really interesting. We want to do it. So we organized one. We flew out to Hawaii together as a family. My brother-in-law was there. My wife was there. And in preparation, you know, the group that we were with said, listen, if you can and you don't get headaches, because there are some people that they get go away from caffeine and they'll get headaches and they have to be very mindful, you know, of dealing with that. But if you don't get headaches, we sort of encourage you in sort of this week prep, at least cut your caffeine intake in half. And then if you can, right before the journey that we're setting up for you guys, you know, if you feel comfortable, again, it's for everybody's individual choice, go off of caffeine. We just want to remove some of the things that are there. But also, you know, if you aren't off of the media, like switch off the news, right? Mm-hmm. Don't be watching and sort of taking in super stimulating things that are sort of fear-based. And they gave us a bunch of prep, you know, add in a small meditation, just even 5 minutes a day, do a little bit of journaling, set an intention. And, you know, my parents had one of the most magical, mystical experiences of their life, right? They had like such a beautiful experience. And when we were unpacking it all in the group, so much of the group was saying that partly the reason that they felt that they had such a beautiful experience was actually doing something that, you know, we've had Reverend Michael Beckwith on this podcast. He says, if you look at the word sacrifice, sacrifice comes from the root word sacred. You are removing something from your life to make something else sacred. So it's almost like we were making the ceremony a very sacred thing. Even the people who were organizing for us were like, you guys all did your fucking homework. Like everybody here gets like an A for like really actually doing the prep. But how much of the benefit was just the journey, and how much was the benefit that we really took this situation sacred and then of course followed like the whole integration mm-hmm. process. So that's just a little anecdote.
I love the intentionality of it all.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. What do you guys want to talk about next?
You know, I think, you know, you mentioned the media and people have asked us, you know, why do you write a book? Because we're clearly busy with My Body Green. We have a platform. And there were a couple of reasons. And I'll touch on one that's important to me. And one is the problem I think we have with media right now, specifically the platforms. And I'll reference a study by Wharton, which I think shines a lot of light on this. So Wharton analyzed the most emailed list of the New York Times. These are like the most widely read articles in the world. Everyone wants to be on the email list. Essentially, it's a indicator of virality. And they looked at the pieces and they classified them by emotion to look at patterns. And the top three were anxiety, awe, and anger. Guess what number one was? Anger. Hmm. If the article invoked anger, it was 34% more likely to be on that list. And this is the New York Times.
Sure.
And so if you take a step back, media, platforms, algorithms look at engagement, they look at comments, and unfortunately, anger is the most primal emotion that drives so much of the content we consume, not only politically, but in our world. And it's something we've seen quite a bit of. You know, we'll joke about the Mediterranean diet. It's pretty balanced for the most part. Don't see a lot of Mediterranean diet influencers making a killing on Instagram these days. It's extreme points of view, you know, whether it's the Liver King or, you know, it's demonizing a food group. It's an all or nothing point of view. And we don't believe that's healthy. We don't believe that most people can incorporate that into their lifestyle. And it's something that has been a pain point for us with social media and algorithms. And then you have, you know, Google, which is another set of circumstances where you have to be extraordinarily watered down. And, you know, for us at this moment in time, we think most people lie in the silent majority. They're reasonable people who don't really want to embrace the extreme, but that's what they're presented by, and want alternatives that are proven and can be implemented for someone who's busy, who maybe doesn't have resources. And I think the major objection to health and well-being from people is I don't have the time and I don't have the resources financially. And we think that there's so much great science out there that leads you to these time-tested techniques that anyone can incorporate. We go through a lot of them in the book. And it's just such an important point for us, because even though there's so much, I go back, we've been doing this for 14 years, there's so much health and wellness out there. It's amazing. I look at all the technology and tools and content, yet we're getting sicker. So, you know, for us, it was important really to present that information in the book format, because it can't really exist in the algorithm.
Yeah. Can I kind of ask you something about that and kind of toss in something, maybe a little bit of stress testing for the benefit for our audience that's there, right?
Sure.
So I also feel like the nature of things is that the public sort of looks at a lot of things, even maybe things that you guys are doing right now, or even things that I'm doing, and people will say that that's extreme, right? Like, it could even be like the how we look at even strength training now, just even maybe 10 years ago, some people would have even looked at that aspect as more extreme. You're not an athlete. You're not a this thing. You're not a that thing. And I think that actually human beings in general are quite smart. And even though it's a lot of sensationalized stuff that gets viral, that might be the entry point into a lot of things, but people kind of level off a little bit, right? Like, we all did like the raw food diet. Like, what is more extreme than that, right? Do we regret that time period that was there? No, we evolved from it, right? And it's because we evolved from it, because you guys found, you know, voices of reason that are better and were explaining stuff. So I think that only one thing that I would say is that I wonder, what does an alternative look like? Can we have a utopia that just is like balanced media all the time? It's going to naturally be that the extreme voices are always going to sort of be there, but can we raise the more balanced voices so that people can more quickly find better resources for them? But wouldn't you say, for example, like you and I doing the raw food diet for a while, like, wouldn't a lot of people label that as extreme?
They would, but I also think there aren't many people like you and I who will publicly say they tried something and then completely do a 180. I think that's hard for a lot of influencers to do, because once you build an audience around a specific topic or subject matter, maybe that's emotional, like diet, those followers will revolt if you change your point of view. And we didn't build our brands. You know, MindBodyGreen wasn't built on that. You weren't built on that. But I think for a lot of individuals out there on platforms, it's more difficult to change their point of view. And I understand why. Because to some degree, you're in the business of telling your audience what they want to hear. And I think that's an issue.
Well, and what we're having right now is an extraordinarily like nuanced, honest conversation, admitting where we've evolved, where we've been wrong, where we and where we are today. That's really hard to do in a snackable moment, where what's going to get your attention on social media is that first 5 seconds of a hook. And it incentivizes these polarizing points of view. And I do hope that we get to that point where the nuance prevails and the conversation becomes a little more civil. Because the reality is most people can get to 80% of their optimal health and well-being without going to these extremes and without, you know, that can be easily integrated into their daily lives. And that's really the crux of the book. And we also talk about the 20% to get you to that optimal sense, you know, a place that Jason spends a lot of his time. But I think it makes health and wellness feel unattainable for so many people that don't have those resources of time and money.
I think you said a key word there, which is civility, right? We don't actually want less polarization. Polarization is debate. And debate makes us all healthier. It's how we evolved, because we saw two people debating about different ways to approach things. What we're really looking for is civility.
It's a great ad.
And on the flip side, we all need to understand, like, people, listen, even I fall into this without even trying to necessarily do it. I had on Callie Means on our podcast recently. Mm-hmm. Have you guys been following his work and everything?
Sure.
You know, he basically is now a whistleblower. And in his new work and the new company he's founding, and talking about the incentives that are out there and some of the playbook that big corporations use to sort of stack the weight in favor of confusing the population. And in his particular episode with us, he talked about how Big Soda was basically saying that the laws to try to take soda off of food stamps as one of the main food ingredients that's purchased on food stamps and the SNAP program was, you know, people, they were calling opponents of that racist, right? That was his viral tweet and everything. I was angry. And I knew it was happening. And even people like my dear friend, Dr. Mark Hyman, again, you guys know him too. He's had experiences with that. But the way that Callie said it, the way he talked about it, I was like, you know what? I want my audience to get riled up about this too, because this is kind of fucked up.
Yeah. Right?
Now, I also know, and there's the Eckhart Tolle side of me that's like, I get it. And this is like the sense of stuff. We need to have the good voices rise up. But I wanted people to be angry about that situation. I leaned into a, probably a title that got people angry, and that episode went viral, right? Now, it's a long format conversation. Of course, there's clips along with it too, but I wanna say I'm the first person to play into it when I feel that it suits my needs,
right,
or that I feel that I'm on the right side with somebody. You know, we mentioned Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, right?
Yeah.
When we had her on, it was just at a very interesting time where Instagram was launching Reels to compete with TikTok, right? And it just coincided that the Reels that we did with her launched at a time where like they fucking blew up like crazy. The one clip that we had of hers has like now 10 million views, right? And every day I get DMs from plant-based people saying, you are promoting an extreme view, right? You're promoting an extreme view. So I'm being accused of the same thing that we're talking about over here. So I think that the nuance on the nuance is that everybody feels like they're not doing it, even the people that feel like they're coming from the right place.
I agree with that 100%. Because there's a certain amount of just to be on the internet in 2023 where you have to grab people's attention because there's so much of it between Reels and TikToks.
Even if you believe in it, right?
Exactly.
Like I'm telling you, like I was angry about what Callie was talking about and I wanted other people to be angry about it too.
And they should be.
Right? And I felt like this was an important thing. So, you know, I'm playing in the same things
we also love you, Gabrielle Lyon, had a similar experience when we had Gabrielle Lyon on our podcast. And where it crossed the line for me, you brought up the word civility, is we had well-known influencers posting her clip as a way to take her down without the context and the nuance of everything that she had said in the conversation, where it was just to gain more followers when you're posting something without all the context and the conversation.
It might have been, right?
Look, you need to do what you need to do to attract attention in this world. But I think what we're trying to call attention to is there are people out there who specifically come to the table with the idea of inciting anger. And so the Gabrielle Lyon example, we had her on our show. We were talking about different modalities and we asked Pilates, is Pilates enough if you want to, you know, really build lean muscle mass? And she said, no, it's not. You need to do resistance training. She also said she likes Pilates, but so that reel was posted. And then we had a prominent influencer in the space go after her and said, this woman's trying to take down Pilates, essentially. And to me, that's a difference where you disagree with someone. And so rather you brought up civility, trying to have a conversation of, you know, let's talk about our disagreement. I disagree. I think Pilates is great for X, Y, and Z. It was, let's take her down. Let's cancel her.
Let's bring our army together.
Let's bring our army.
But also, if you talk to that person, and I don't know who this person is, right? Probably you got them on the phone. They probably felt attacked by that component that was there, right? Like they probably felt attacked that clip existed. She didn't include did you guys include the thing that said that, hey, like I like Pilates, but it's not the way to do stuff?
We had some more context in the caption. But I think in general, this idea of, you know, I think for a lot of people, their belief system can become ideological. And if someone challenges that belief system, it can get very ugly quickly.
Yeah. And I say like, let others get ugly. Because that's actually a byproduct of the difference that you're making. If you need to correct, like, is there a magic world where people don't get ugly, right? I guess that's my question, right? Like, what is our dream vision for it? It's kind of like the market is the market. And MindBodyGreen has grown so much tremendously because of social media.
Yes.
Yeah.
My businesses have all done really well because of social media. And generally, it's the news cycle. Things kind of pop up a little bit and they fade away. And I would say that actually, even though our bigger population that is the ultra processed food doesn't have access to health, is struggling with basic healthcare, which is a big problem in the United States, that side is getting sicker. But then there's this other side that's actually getting healthier. It's a small percentage of people, right? So we have this split, which is super fucked up and unfortunate, yes, right? But I would also say, like, I guess I'm just adding in. I'm not trying to be difficult to be difficult. No. I'm just like, what is the alternative? What are we wishing for?
Well, I also think, all of us in this space, we all are trying to help people. And I also think you mentioned the two groups. There's this, you know, there's us group. We're all getting healthier. We're all focused on longevity. And then you got this group over here who's sicker and they're not getting well. And I also think this group over here is looking at us and seeing us fighting and saying, you guys are fucking crazy. I don't know if I want to subscribe to this.
Not just health and wellness.
You guys can't agree.
Everything.
I know. Everything. I know. But we're the good guys, though. We're the good guys. And I understand.
That's what we tell ourselves.
Oh, we're on the west side of LA. Come on. It's all good. We're the good guys. But I do think it's all coming. I don't think so. Politics, without going down this rabbit hole, I think, you know, is driven a lot by power. I do think with health and wellness, we know so many great people in this space. A lot of them have powerful personal stories. They healed themselves. They've been transformed. They ultimately, I think most people have good intentions and want to do well, but then they get caught up in the,
I mean, there's so much passion that, you know, if this group of people, if you think of what role religion played in people's lives, it's now playing out IRL with the same amount of passion in the health and wellness world, where, you know, if you could say I was a CrossFitter or I do yoga, you have a certain psychographic of a persona in mind where you're like, okay, I think I know that. So we've assembled these tribes and, you know, they have that same religious fervor for their belief system that they had in religion.
Totally. And I think that's just a byproduct of where we're at. And we've all been part of that tribe advocating that our side had it right and the other side had it wrong. You know, I think a really good trend that I'm seeing now, which I'm so excited about, and in the wellness space, and I think Andrew Huberman is one of the main ones that's leading this, is he's inviting on people on his podcast that he disagreed with him. And that he changed his mind on, right? Even us doing this episode where we're long format talking about things we've changed our mind on, there's even a list of topics where, like, you know, I've shared with Mark Hyman, I'm like, here's a list of people you should have on your podcast that have come after you. And you know what? They might have had some interesting points that are over here. Have a conversation with them for the betterment of the community. Show your homework. Show you where you're coming from. And double down on the things that you actually get a chance and believe in. So I think the dialogue is what society's craving for,
yes,
right? They want to hear the dialogue, even if people at the end of the day say, you know what? I still disagree with you.
Yes.
Right? I still do not see eye to eye with you. And I see this view. People are smart. They're waking up. And that's why I feel like so much independent media is exploding right now, is because people want to hear the long format discussion. Where they get upset is when they feel like, when I get the most flack now, and this didn't used to happen like 2-3 years ago when my podcast started, when I have on a guest that has a very strong viewpoint, right? Let's take like a Dr. Gundry or a Dave Asprey or something like that, right? If I don't, and my listeners who have listened to me, just like you guys, they know kind of what you're into, not into, you know, what your questions are and stuff, how you're living your life. They hear you. If they don't hear in a nice way for the benefit of the audience, not that we're a got you journalist, if they don't hear us stress testing their argument, I'm hearing from more people than ever before, like, why did you not ask him or say that you don't believe in that yourself? That doesn't mean that he can't have that view, but you don't. And that's a sign that people are growing up. They want to hear the full conversation and then they can make up their own mind with it.
Well, I think you guys are the beacon of light at the beginning of this trend, because there are still a lot of people who will only have people on their podcast who 100% subscribe to their philosophy. And I agree, this is the way that people need to hear these topics and hear them civilly debated. But you are leading the charge here.
Well, I hope that we all lead. And for many years, I wasn't. I didn't want to. Guys, I was the number one people. I was the person telling everybody, dairy's going to kill you, right? When I was like a vegan, right? Because I had my own N-of-1 experience. You know, talk about N-of-1 experience. Yep. I had really bad cystic acne all throughout high school. I grew up vegetarian, right? And literally dairy was my only protein that I would have. I didn't really like eating a lot of lentils and stuff like that. My stomach would hurt. And then one day I went to a youth sort of meditation conference. It was here in Los Angeles. And I heard a keynote speaker say that basically dairy, blah, 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 you know, it's coming from more of an animal rights perspective. Yeah. And she's talking to a group of like vegetarian young Indian youth. And they're like, seriously, like Taco Bell is the only thing that we can eat right now. Then she was talking, wasn't paying attention. And finally at the end, it's the first time that I heard somebody say, this is the year 2000. So it's a while ago, right? 23 years ago. She said, and for some people, dairy, there might be a link to gut inflammation and acne. First time I heard the word inflammation, probably the first time that I heard somebody saying like gut related to anything. And then she said acne, which I was struggling with. So I was like, okay, I'm willing to do anything. I tried different gel. I tried Accutane. I tried all this stuff. Still, it would go away a little bit. And then it would came back. I went off dairy for a month. My skin completely cleared up, right? Oh. Completely cleared up. I was shouting through the rooftops. I was judging everybody. I was telling everybody, you got to get off of dairy. And like a lot of people, you know, I evolved from that and I understood, okay, obviously there might be people that do need to get off dairy temporarily. Sure, there's a lot of fucked up situations with animals. Okay, in other sense, can targeted dairy, fermented dairy, kefir, can they be beneficial to health? So I kind of think that more information, more discussion, the fact that you guys have a podcast, I have a podcast now, so many more people are putting out their stories and their experiences. It just feels like our only way out of this mess is not less debating, it's more people putting out content and sharing their journey so that they can faster, more quickly get out of this limited point of view that they're in. And I think social media is here to stay. So whatever's kind of going on with it is probably still going
to
go on.
Yeah. And we've never been taught how to interact with a world in which there's literally millions of media companies who are individual content creators and experts. And we haven't been taught, like, when you're listening to this conversation, they could be coming from an N of one of experience. Keep that in your mind. And so we just haven't been taught how to take in all this information and decipher what's pattern recognition, what we need to take, what we need to toss, and what we need to, you know, keep with us.
You know, and I think our ultimate goal is to empower people, you know, educate people and let them come to their own conclusions, because there's so much information. There's a lot of good and there's some bad. And
it's a long journey to get to the place where you can then take all this information and be like, I understand that works for most people. It doesn't work for me. And I'm going to do my own thing. Yeah. You brought up cold therapy. And we recognize there's a lot of great science for cold therapy. It's accessible. It's affordable. It checks all of our boxes for as we want to bring on all these people on the wellness journey. I have Ray Notes where I get, you know, purple when I'm in cold temperatures. It's not for me. I'm not doing it. While I recognize that there's a lot of science. Yeah. And there's a couple examples of that, whether it's the fact that I will still have my margarita at lunch, or even though I'm really obsessed with light therapy, I know that if I unwind in bed watching some television, it brings me a lot of joy. And at the end of the day, you got to take all this information and you know your body better than any doctor, better than all the science out there. You are your own N of one and you got to be intentional about finding what actually works for you.
Yeah. And I think another aspect of that is that even if you don't know your body, mostly people listening here are adults. You get to do whatever the fuck you want to do, right? Yeah. And who cares if it's good, if it's bad? It's at the end of the day, you get to do whatever you want to do.
And we also think there's been almost like this path with health and wellness, more specifically longevity, where, you know, longevity or your hardcore health and wellness enthusiast, it was really hard work. You couldn't have fun. It was expensive. And we believe that joy and longevity do not have to be mutually exclusive. And there are practices, which we talk about in the book, which where the rubber hits the road in a good way, where you can incorporate practices in your life that work for you and bring you joy and will actually lead to longevity, you know, without maybe, you know, taking it to measuring your lactate and your VO2 max to see how you're doing in terms of, you know, that measure of longevity. And it really doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. It can be fun. You don't have to be angry at the hot bar at Erewhon waiting in line. You can do things that bring you joy.
Give us a couple. Let's come back to the book, Joy of Well-Being. Give us a couple of those things that you talk about inside of there that is both the intersection of it's good for you and it could be fun.
You know, I think one of the things I absolutely love and Colleen mentioned is walking. Walking is just so tried and true. It is one of the best things you can possibly do. There are all sorts of different ways we talk about in the book. You could do interval walking. You could be walking in nature. There are all sorts of benefits. You could be, you know, if you're with a friend, you're waiting for the elevator, take the stairs. You know, you can just be walking all the time, and it is so critical. And it's one of my favorite things to do. If I don't get my 10,000 steps, I'm like angry. I'm a different person. So walking for me is paramount.
Pickleball is my easy win. And this has been a newfound hobby since we moved to Miami in June.
I was going to say, now that you're in Florida, pickleball, you got the bug.
It brings us so much joy. Does it ladder up to our resistance training goals? Probably not, but it's super fun. We have a great time as a family. We're outside. We're getting vitamin D. We're moving. It's a lot of joy.
Actually, it might even help you with resistance training. It's like, you know, you're becoming more agile. Right, they have all these like mobility, different types of mobility workouts and things with like these bouncy balls they do that like resistance trainers are doing now to make them quicker, like having their muscle twitch go faster. So who knows? It might be helping you.
It's great for reflexes.
Yeah,
yeah, hand-eye coordination. It does get your heart rate up too. So I will add that.
Yeah,
I love it. What's next for Mind Body Green in terms of like how do you want it to like? Okay, there's the book, right? And obviously that's putting it out there. And the question is always, even with my own podcast, I ask this, how do I want to be this positive force that's driving these principles and morals that I want to talk about to make it at the end of the day easier for people, right? Mind Body Green is both a media website. So you've benefited and you've helped the careers of other people by showcasing the work of a lot of different individuals who have often maybe different viewpoints on things, right?
A lot of times.
And people benefit from it. So is there things that you're thinking about with Mind Body Green that you want to do in the future that still service the audience and allow them to make up their own mind, and you're giving a platform for people who have different opinions on things, but you're also trying to double down on some of these basics that you guys want to do?
You know, one time our good friend, mutual friend, Dr. Will Cole, referred to us as the United Nations of Wellness, which we really took to heart and really appreciated. And we still want to be that place where people can come with different points of view and be that safe space, whether it's on the podcast, whether it's an article, whether it's video content, we still want to be that place where people can go. And also, no matter where they are on that journey, whether wellness is new and scary to you, or you're the serious longevity guru who's passionate about tracking everything, we still want to be that place and bring you content and now products wherever you are. So, you know, sleep, for example, whether it's bringing you content and sleep or bringing you our sleep support product, and product's been the exciting new extension for us where you can, you know, I saw personally with my homocysteine, like supplements worked for me, and just bring people products that can help transform their lives, whether it's, you know, content or physical product.
I love it. What I'd love to see, if you want to add to your product roadmap, this is my suggestion, sure. Take it or leave it. You know, Mark always references back again, talking about Mark Hyman, about his whole Pegan thing came from like that debate that you guys had,
yes,
right?
2014
I want you guys to start hosting some online debates in a friendly way, right? You know who does this really well? Barry Weiss. If you guys follow the Free Pass,
yes, totally.
Podcast,
we love Barry's
honestly,
podcast. Yeah.
She does a great job of being a moderator,
yeah,
allowing people who have extremely different, some of those conversations get heated, right? They get very heated in terms of people vigorously fighting, which is a good thing. We want people to fight and debate about what their site sees, and people learn from that. And you need a strong moderator to kind of hold it together. But I actually think that the audience is craving that. If you guys don't do it, I'm going to probably do it. Like, people want to see these dialogues, but they want to see the civility. Going back to what you said, Colleen, they want to see the civility of like, hey, by the way, at the end of the day, most people who are probably not the same people that are listening to this podcast here, right? Generally speaking, these are going to be people that have multiple jobs. They don't have time for, you know, listening to a podcast for an hour and a half or whatever it might be, but maybe their friend shares a few nuggets of wisdom with them. But those individuals are going to benefit from walking a little bit more, getting off of ultra processed foods. In many cases in the United States, unfortunately, it's probably getting some sort of job that gets them access to healthcare, mm-hmm, that doesn't have super high deductibles, mm-hmm, right? And getting off of maybe liquid calories and having some sense of community in their life. That alone is so hard, but the vast majority of people are going to just benefit from just that aspect, right? Those basics. So I think that there's a place to have really fun and engaging conversations, because I'll tell you that one of the things that, again, that I just hear from my audience again and again is that you have people on, but this episode, this person's saying the exact opposite thing that this person said in this previous episode.
Sure.
Well, let's get them together and kind of hash it out and have some great moderators lead it. So maybe you guys do that in the future.
Love it. That was one of my all-time favorite Revitalize moments. That
it was Joel Kahn, Frank Lippmann, and Mark.
Yeah.
The difference was they all liked each other and respected each other.
I think,
and I also think that's why it went so well.
Yeah,
I thought about
that
one a lot.
It was they also bonded for a day before the talk, so they broke bread together. They had the opportunity to connect as humans. They weren't on a Zoom interview, or they weren't just thrown on stage at the last moment. They were at an event that was all about collective well-being, so there was a community aspect to it. And so even if the house rules weren't articulated, they were articulated through the way in which the event was run, that this was the type of conversation we were going to have.
Right context and right setting.
For sure. And that may not always be possible, but at least you as a moderator can come in kind of like a parent and say, hey, play nice, listen.
Totally. So the year after, we tried to recreate that with Dave Asprey, Garth Davis, and Rich Roll.
I don't know Garth Davis. I don't know who that is.
Very strong point of view, vegan, great guy.
Okay, cool.
Next to Dave. And then there was Rich. Rich basically didn't partake. He was like, I'm staying out of this.
He was a smart one that said, what's that line, right? If you wrestle with the pig, you're going to get dirty. But the only difference is the pig likes it.
And Garth just came for Dave. And it was an interesting one.
Wow. Yeah. A little different energy balance that time.
A little different situation. People want to pick up the book. Do you guys have a website for it? Do they go to My Body Green?
Yes, thejoyofwellbeing.com.
Amazing. Are you doing any kind of like fun bonuses or any kind of extended stuff?
Yes, we have an amazing bonus. We've talked about sleep and Colleen's extensive sleep issues. And so the sleep doctor himself, Dr. Michael Bruce, we have some great tips from him for anyone to help get their sleep back on track, which anyone can access.
Cool. Awesome. We'll link to them in the show notes, and we'll have it in the YouTube. We'll put a little URL over here. And then the supplements, do you guys want to just mention that, where people can find those too?
Sure. MindBodyGreen, shop.mindbodygreen.com. We've got an extensive portfolio, everything from sleep to our multivitamins.
Each of your favorites? What's like the, there's probably a lot of favorites, but like the go-to?
My Desert Island product is our Sleep Support Plus.
Sleep Support.
Magnesium, awesome. Jujube, and Pharma. Get
it. Nice. And then for me, my methylation support.
Yeah.
My homocysteine went from 63 to 10. I can't make that up.
That's awesome. Very cool. Jason, Colleen, thank you guys for coming on the podcast. We kind of went in a lot of different directions, but I appreciate you, you know, being willing to have the conversation. It's kind of really interesting because we both, you know, you guys are more, you know, you're writing the book and you're more closer to the expertise than, you know, I am. I just like to ask the questions, but we both sit at the interesting intersection of being able to see a lot of different trends that are out there. And we both have had a long journey in sort of the wellness space. So I think people want to hear that insider view that you guys definitely gave, which is, at the end of the day, no matter how confusing things are, you can always return back to the basics, and it's what the basics that end up mattering. So thanks for reminding our audience about that.
Well, thank you so much, Drew, and again, to reiterate, be rigid about being flexible. It's a journey.
Awesome. Thank you guys.
Take care.
Thank you.